It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's a fun.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com as well as the mobile app. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. It is presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. Multiple ways you can interact with us here on the program. You give us a ring, 201-939-4513. You can hit us up on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat. And as a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at Giants.com/podcast. So we have a lot to tackle. Joe Shane just addressed the media. We will give you our takeaways. We'll recap some of the highlights from that. And we're going to preview a pair of prospect classes. It's going to be a focus on Kansas and Kansas State. So we will try to squeeze in some phone calls along the way. But Paul, let's start off right off the top with respect to what Joe Shane had to say. And I wouldn't say that there was anything startling, but to me, what I found the most interesting was he was asked about the chances of moving up or moving down in conversations. Remember, Joe Shane's made it clear he does his homework before the draft to lay out any potential deals, but he did reveal that he has surprisingly, even to himself, received quite a lot of phone calls about teams behind the Giants willing to perhaps talk shop and move up to six, and that perhaps after a follow-up question, that means maybe there's going to be even more activity actually on draft day, because at this point, they're not going to pull the trigger on anything. You got to wait and see how things play out. But I thought that was probably one of the most interesting nuggets that came out of his presser.
Well, it was. And as we've always said, you know, there's the draft value board that most people base a lot of their draft day deals on. And he admitted something that we've also always known, and that is if a team believes that you're making a move up to go get a quarterback, you're going to pay a premium. It's not going to be what the draft value board says. You're going to have to pay and then some to be able to go up and get a QB. He said in all his years in the NFL, he's never been involved in a draft day trade where his team moved down to help a team that was going up to get a quarterback. He said that's never happened before. He did say the draft has a lot of really good wide receivers.
A lot of depth.
Has a lot of good quarterbacks. In particular, he cited those two positions.
And the quarterbacks, a lot of starting experience jumped out to him in his mind.
But I think the other thing, which, you know, you folks, if you've been listening to our program, you know all along, and it's not a surprise, he totally threw 100% support behind Daniel Jones. Says he does expect him. He's been running straight lines. He's been throwing. He expects him to be ready for training camp, barring a setback. Said flat out he is comfortable with the three quarterbacks they have if they go into the season with Jones, Locke, and DeVito. And went out of his way to praise DeVito and his growth over the course of the time since he's been with the Giants. So, you know, obviously he's not going to put all his cards on the table today. That would make no sense. So I don't want to go absolutely hog wild crazy over everything that he has said, you know, detail by detail. But yes, he was consistent in his complete support of Daniel Jones, referred to the 2022 season, said, hey, that was a guy who was 25 years old and performed at a very high level, got us to the playoffs and won us a road playoff game. I have complete confidence in him. Also said flat out that the Rich Eisen comment on NFL Network about the Giants being done with Daniel Jones, and his quote was, not true.
Well, and having buyer's remorse was also the quote that Eisen used that Joe Shane had denied, meaning in the wake of giving Daniel Jones the contract.
So have at it, folks. You know, again, I don't think anyone would have expected the general manager, even if he had some negativity to say, I don't think you're going to expect to hear that today anyway. But having said that, these are the facts. These are the things that he said. We're simply reporting them to you.
And like you said, it's also important not to read so much into everything, because Joe Shane, and this was also another interesting part, he was asked about in the past that a lot of teams don't normally know what the Giants' game plan is going into the draft, because Joe Shane keeps a lot of things close to the vest. And he was asked, listen, is that part of strategy? Do you do that intentionally? And he goes, you know, it's just how he goes about his business. The other thing to
especially add, when you're higher in the draft at six as opposed to lower, he said
you have
to keep it close to the vest. So he's very happy about the fact that people are saying the Giants are camouflaging and making people guess. He loves that.
He was also asked about whether or not there's pressure, given what happened last season, to get this pick right. And he said they feel comfortable based on their homework, whether they go in the direction of any position, that they're going to be able to get a playmaker, and the fact that it's much easier to make this pick this year in comparison to last season when they were in the 20s and there's so much activity happening. You put your board and you know, okay, five or six players, if these five or six guys are off the board, they have an idea of who perhaps would be next in line. So he just compared both of the drafts, at least from that standpoint. But once again, go ahead.
Well, I think the other thing you must consider too, and he was very specific about this, and not enough people understand this. He said, quote, it's a good quarterback class. I think it's deep. He said, it's been fun getting to know these guys like we do every year. His comment, though, as he embellished, was that it's important to meet all these guys. You have a lot of people out there who are saying, well, the Giants have met with a whole slew of quarterbacks. That means they have to be drafting one, right? Well, not necessarily. As Joe Shane said, that information can be important information for you down the road.
Yeah.
As you progress, you want to be able to go back to this initial interview and find out a lot about what that guy's made up of. So he's making it very clear that all these quarterback interviews does not and do not assume it's about this year. Those quarterback interviews, he said, that's a very special position. You want to compile as much info as you can because you may need it down the road.
Well, case in point, for example, they signed Drew Lock this offseason.
Bingo.
So when Drew Lock was in his draft class, now Joe Shane wasn't with the Giants, of course, but any intel that he got out of Drew Lock comes into play when you're looking through the free agency.
And I'm
sure
that's the same thing that the Bills did when they went after Trubisky, when he got released
by
Chicago.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the Bills, the connection that you were talking about in terms of moving up and how teams are not going to do you a favor if you want a quarterback, he was asked specifically about the Josh Allen trade, and he said Tampa Bay, they knew what the Bills were going to do, that the Bucks had an idea that Buffalo was moving up to grab a quarterback. So that is what he could tap into in terms of experience. He was also asked, when you look back at the Josh Allen evaluation, was there something in particular that Brandon Bean, the general manager, was wowed by? And he said it really wasn't one thing in particular. There were multiple factors. And that was asked as a means of comparison. Are you looking for a specific criteria or characteristic connected to any of these quarterbacks? Now, he was asked specifically about one quarterback in particular, Michael Penix Jr., and the injury history. He didn't want to get into specifics, but he did say that they had their meeting with the medical people on Monday, and that they didn't lose as many people perhaps as previous years, so they find that encouraging. Now, he wasn't once again pinpointing any player, but he said the medical feedback was pretty positive, that they didn't lose any of the guys, because Joe Shane said in years past, you got a bunch of guys you love. You speak to the medical people
they cross them off,
and you're like,
they cross them off. He said they didn't lose a lot this year.
Correct. So you can read into that however as you wish.
Exactly.
Yeah. But at least that was something that encompasses, of course, the quarterback class. And we'll get into a number of ins and outs with respect to what Joe Shane had to say and hear from your takeaways if you had an opportunity to see it live streamed on Giants.com. In the meantime, speaking of the draft, let's try to preview a bunch of other prospect classes. And we're going to start our journey with the Kansas Jayhawks class. And to help us break down this group, we are joined by former Kansas running back. He now serves as a sideline reporter on the Kansas Radio Network. And that is none other than Brandon McAnderson. Brandon, you got Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time today. Hope all is well. How's everything on your end?
Incredible, man. I'm glad to be joining you. And anytime I can talk about the Jayhawks to a bigger audience, I welcome it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure having you on the program. We appreciate you making the time. So let's start with Kansas's top prospect, and that, of course, is edge rusher Austin Booker. He's got the length. He's got the athleticism. He's got the speed. And you know, people I've seen even compare him to a basketball player in terms of his wingspan. With that being said, as you well know, Brandon, the sample size is minute. It's tiny because his first and only season with Kansas was this past year as he transferred from Minnesota. So where is his upside? How much of the surface has he scratched in your mind in terms of if you draft him in the NFL, what you can mold him into?
Oh, man, he is a true sky-is-the-limit prospect. You know, coming from Minnesota, he only played 25 games at Minnesota, or 25 snaps, I should say. So he was a complete unknown. This time last year in the spring, he was an intriguing player, but really not someone that we thought as a media staff they were going to rely upon. And boy, did he flip the script early. What you notice about him is the combination of length and power is very unique, simply because 6'6 guys don't bend the way that this guy bends. He had so many impact tackles in the run game, and that's not how you think about a lengthy defensive end in terms of where their production is going to come from. He's just a unique specimen, and what you see with him is I like the basketball reference because, you know, his ability to transition that length and quickness into power is unique. You'll see him bull rush some of the top tackles in the Big 12. You'll see him spin around them. You'll see him bend around them. I just think that once he learns an NFL system and learns what's required of him, whether that be, you know, a hand-in-the-dirt guy or an outside linebacker that can drop and also rush the passer, you're getting a guy that, I mean, really could become anything. You know, the guy that immediately comes to mind is Max Crosby, just because Crosby's ability to transition into power is unique. And I think Austin has a lot of those same characteristics, and a coaching staff is going to be very excited to get a chance to mold a player like that.
Well, it seems to me, though, that because of the relatively few games that he's played at this level, you're going to have to be patient, right? Because this is not just add water and he's ready to go. He'll probably need some maturing and some grooming and obviously getting used to the power and the strength and the speed of the NFL game. I think, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're going to have a little bit of patience with him, aren't you?
I think you're going to have quite a bit of patience. He's not going to be a guy that could probably come in and hold up in the run game right away. Mm-hmm. I think he'd surprise you, though, because he's violent with his hands, and that length allows him to get separation. So I kind of see him as a player that you can bring along slowly in terms of keeping him in your building, you know, keeping him on that practice squad. But he's also a guy you could call up, and he could cover kicks. He could be a situational pass rusher early in his career. He's a guy that could kind of help you in some other areas while he develops his position. So I think he's a guy that he's just a perfect, you know, third, fourth, fifth round type candidate. He's not a boom or bust because you feel like his floor is going to be relatively high just because of his natural ability and his raw physical traits. But the upside for this guy could be Pro Bowl, could be, you know, 5-6 year starter. So I think that he's just a guy that he has the kind of traits that matter to NFL programs.
Well, speaking of the traits, I want to piggyback off of a point you brought up in this last response where, Brandon, you were talking about he may not be ideal in terms of stopping the run. Where have you seen his growth in that area? Because when you have length like that, you can be an asset if he can get into the backfield, and he did have 12 tackles for loss last season. So how far did he come along, or how did they utilize him in that regard this past season at Kansas?
So you think it's another Max Crosby thing. When you watch Max play at the point of attack, he can beat a guy right away. And sometimes it's with speed, sometimes it's with deception, sometimes it's with effort. So I think on the front side of run game, I think Austin has all of those. But I thought where he really made an impact was on the backside of zone-type running plays where you're trying to seal that guy, or that's the cutback option. And the reason he's so good at it is because he's got a thirst for the ball, man. He's hungry. So when he's tracking it from the backside, his eyes are in the right place. And then when you look at him physically, his posture and pad level are just lower than what you would expect from somebody that stands 6'5", 6'6". So what it allowed him to do was transition into big-time power hits, even on smaller backs, which I thought was completely unique, especially for the type of size profile he has. But what I like about him the most is his ability to track on the backside and then his ability to really detonate a guy when he has the opportunity. I think that was my favorite thing about him as a run defender was that, you know, he could really just, like, hit a guy where you're like, geez, who was that? And you stand up, and it's this 6'6 guy. You're like, what? You know, why was he down around his knees anyway? And his ability to lower his center of gravity and still be able to explode and make tackles. He's just a unique prospect that has that kind of takeover ability, but he's shown it in such small increments relative to some of the other prospects. But if you're a team that believes in your developmental program, you could get the top out of this guy.
All right, last question about him before we move on. You've told us a lot about his on-the-field traits, but if you're going to have patience and develop a guy to reach his full potential, he also better have a lot of the intangibles, the work ethic, the desire, being a good teammate, and being, you know, the coach's kind of player. How do those things fit into his profile? Because I suspect he's going to need to have those if you're going to show patience with him.
Absolutely. I think that's just as much of a strength as his on-field. I talked about last spring, there was not a lot of expectations around him. He didn't even start that many games. He was a guy that would come in usually the second drive or usually that first early third down. He wasn't like a guaranteed starter. Even though you knew on the important downs he was going to be in, he never made a fuss about it. He wasn't a guy that was like, why am I not being featured more? You know, he wasn't a me guy, and he had every right to be, and he just showed no signs of that. He was a guy that was really doing the work, and the reason he was behind in the spring was, one, he was learning a new system, and he just got there, but two, he put on a lot of weight in a short period of time, and he was really adjusting to that part, and that's just a testament to his work ethic to kind of turn his body from more of a power forward type into a defensive end body style was really about his work ethic. And how broad he is. You saw his lower body development. So I liked him because when he was the featured player, he didn't make a stink about it, didn't make a fuss. When he came out of the spring and wasn't a starter, he didn't let that discourage him. He capitalized on all his reps. And you see in the NFL, every defensive line has a 6 to 8 man rotation. So he's a guy that's already used to that from his college experience and just, you know, doesn't do that.
Well, and it makes sense early in his career to be a rotational guy, given the fact that he's only played 505 career snaps thus far, which is on the low side compared to other draftable prospects. All right, let's flip the script. Let's go to the offensive side of the ball. Guard Dominic Pooney, and he has experience, Brandon, at right tackle, left guard throughout his career at Kansas and Central Missouri, where he played his first 4 years. And he's been a main starter the last two seasons. He played left tackle this past year. He was the left guard in 2022. So where do you see his best fit on the NFL level?
He's a guy I'd love to see at center just because of his true size. I mean, he's a 6'5", 330-pound guy. But when you're next to him, he's rock solid. There's no belly. There's no love handles. You know, he doesn't look like me. The guy looks like a real ball player. And then, you know, when you're 6'5", 330 pounds, that's saying something. What I like about him is his versatility. You know, his Central Missouri career was when he played, he was excellent, but he had some injuries. And he came in, he's another guy where the expectations were low. But the first day I asked about, hey, who's really popping on the field, it was Dominic Pooney. He came to Kansas in July. He was starting at left guard in August. So, you know, it took him about a month to really take hold of the position. He basically played every snap his first year. Second year, he moves to a much more difficult position at left tackle, you know, dealing with some of the top D lines in the Big 12. And not only does he excel at it, he becomes a first-team All-Big 12 type player. Love his versatility. He's a worker. He has a worker mentality and really is a team guy with so much athletic versatility.
I'm interested that you mentioned center because obviously if you're going to be a center, you have to have a very high football acumen. And then the other thing at 6'5", you got to make sure you got that leverage going. You got to make sure you get down. You can't play too high. That's a big deal in this league. But you mentioned center. How much did he practice at center? And what is it about him that makes you believe he could have all of the other intangibles to be a center?
So he was pretty much the backup center. His first year, it's just that our center never went down at all with any injury, so we never really got to see it. But in practice, it was day in, day out. He was playing at center. Mm. And I think when I think about offensive line, I'm thinking about athletically, where are you a plus player? He's not a plus player as left tackle,
right?
Athletically. You know, he doesn't have the kind of length and things that you really covet at the NFL level. But he's a plus player at center because he's 6'5", and he can still bend. because he can get up to the second level. Because when he's taking on those double teams, when he's comboing up to a linebacker, he's done it at guard and tackle. You know, and at guard, that's where you're taking the majority of that force. You got to be able to take that force load and really push him to the way you want to push him. He can do that. Athletically, you know, you saw him at left tackle where he could get beat by some of the premier athletes, but had that kind of basketball skill set where he could shuffle and still protect. And then secondarily, at the second level, he finished guys to the ground. And that, to me, is what's valuable at center, especially in the NFL when you're running your screen game. You want a guy that can get up to that second and potentially third level and make stuff happen. He's got all of that. Athletically, I mean, he's as good as anybody you'll see. And then in the NFL, you want a swing player on the offensive line. Look no further. The guy played three different positions. He played them all well, and he played them at a high level. So I just think he is a prospect's prospect. He's the kind of guy you want. He's older, and he's versatile.
And if you're going to keep an extra offensive lineman on the depth chart, to your point, you want him to be able to play multiple positions. So that definitely screams value from that standpoint. Last one before we let you go, Brandon. Kenny Logan Jr., who has experience at corner and safety, one of your top tacklers over the last few seasons. But it seems as if he flourishes more at the line of scrimmage as opposed to the back end as a deep safety. How valid of a synopsis is that with respect to his game? And do you see teams perhaps being able to tap into also his experience at cornerback earlier in his career?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that can come in and be a defensive gadget player almost. I think he's a guy that, you know, if you have a goal line look and you want a guy that can tackle like a linebacker but can play up a position, or if you're dealing with like an Austin Eckler type where you do need a player of value that can match up with the running back out of the backfield, he's perfectly suited for that just because he's an impact tackler. He's got a good read on it. He's a downhill first guy. He's just the kind of player that you can mix and match. And then special teams-wise, great kick returner. A guy that can help you covering kicks as well. So I think he's a guy that kind of fits as a special teamer with some positional upside as maybe a gadget defender that you can deploy in a package that you might be able to match him against a difficult offensive player. He's got that kind of skill set, and he's definitely a good tackler, great leader.
61 kickoff returns over the course of his career, so that definitely jumps off the page. He is Brandon McAnderson, former Kansas running back. You can hear him on the Kansas Radio Network as the sideline reporter. Brandon, greatly appreciate the time and the insight, and look forward to talking to you down the road. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Absolutely, you as well. Our pleasure. So a nice breakdown and synopsis of some of the Kansas prospects that could very well be hearing their names in the draft, as they have a pass rusher that is intriguing, because whenever a guy plays only 1 year of college ball, Paul, and puts up the numbers he does and has the measurements, you wonder, man, what could we get down the road if we roll the dice with him?
Right. And to be honest, the thing that really intrigued me is what he said about Pooney possibly being a center.
Yeah.
There's so much value in that, and the fact that he practiced for a whole season as the second string center, even though he didn't get into a game. You know, that's good, because that tells you that that coaching staff believed in him enough that they would have used him in a game if necessary. So it's not like you're projecting him as a possible center. You know that his college folks believed in him as a center, which gives him that incredible amount of versatility and flexibility.
Similar, I'm not saying identical, to Shane Lemieux, where they utilized him at practice as a backup center,
right,
the former Giants pick, even though he was solely a guard throughout the course of his career. Well, speaking of interior offensive linemen, that brings us to Kansas State, their group of prospects, as we hear from Stan Weber, former Kansas State quarterback, who is the color analyst on the Kansas State Radio Network. Stan, you got Lance Beddow, Paul Dottino here, Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time today. Hope all is well. How's everything on your end?
Very, very good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on the program, and as I just alluded to, we want to start with Cooper Beebe, who is quite the presence, but what impresses me the most is the amount of experience that he brings to the NFL, Stan, and you can attest to this, the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily get in college all the starting experience year in and year out. And going back to 2021, he's been a staple, whether it's left tackle or left guard, and he's held up durability-wise. Where, though, fit-wise, do you see him flourishing on the NFL level, given he's been moved around a little bit?
Well, I think, first of all, as you think of a player who can have a long career in the NFL, I think Cooper Beebe would fit that bill because, as you know, on game day, you don't have very many offensive linemen available. So the flexibility to do a lot of things is going to be very valuable throughout his career. If you want to put him in a position and let him be a starter for a long, long period of time, I think obviously saying that he's a guard gives you a heck of an advantage. He's played tackle. He started at right tackle back in 2020, then left tackle in 2021, and then he's played offensive guard, but then moved throughout a game. If a guy comes up nicked or something, a uniform issue or whatever, he moves out and plays tackle within a series. So, and he also obviously is practiced at center because of the flexibility. The offensive line coach at K-State, Connor Riley, said, hey, you need to work at center some as well. I didn't do it in the game, so you don't have game film on that, but he has that kind of flexibility. But I think in the NFL, you would really look at him as a dominant offensive guard more than a tackle.
Yeah, I love his strength and his power, the ability to anchor and to get downhill. And he's one of those smash mouth guys, right? One of those guys that John Madden would have liked.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you just bring such smiles to my face saying John Madden's name and talking about the NFL. But absolutely, K-State wanted to play with a physical style. That's what they're about. Not that they don't throw the football. Everybody in college football at a big-time level has to do it. But K-State is one of the few teams that would run the ball more than they pass. That would be the plan to work with, and they try to lean on him. The capability, that physicalness that you're talking about, is important to emphasize. But I don't want to take away from his movement because K-State did a ton of movement where he would be out on the edge in open field trying to make good blocks against linebackers, safeties, kick out a cornerback. So K-State moves their offensive lineman a lot. I don't want to make it seem like he's just a physical guard that wants to punch someone in the mouth all day long on the inside. That's not true. He definitely gets out on the outside and has the capability to move fast and connect on those blocks. But physicality, yes, he loves to hear that.
Well, on that topic, though, if you were to assess his pass protection versus his run blocking, where do you see him having more room to grow, Stan, in either facet?
Well, I think if you had to say, I would say in the pass blocking, because I do think the intricate style that K-State uses in the running game and the fact that he's played all the positions other than center in college as a starter for long periods of time, I think he feels very comfortable and would be ahead of most people in the running game. In the passing game, in the NFL, it's a different game, and you're just going to have to get used to that. It is not a cutdown. Doesn't mean he's not ready or as good as other players that you're looking at in the draft. It's just that's the area, if you had to pick, where you'd have more growth.
Well, I got to ask you now about another guy on offense because I watched his practice workouts at the Shrine game and then watched the game and then went to the combine and said, you know, this Ben Sinnott has so much versatility and flexibility. He does a lot of things well. He may not be the best tight end prospect at individual type spots, but he does so many things well. A coach is going to love get their hands on him. And I've been hoping since the combine that he could be a dark horse for the Giants to maybe grab in the fourth round. Here's the bad news. Supposedly, the reports have come out this week that he has visited with the Giants on one of the 30 visits, and now everybody's talking about him, and I don't think he's going to last that long. Tell me, am I wrong in my evaluation of him, and is he going to be a guy who is deserving of getting so much attention as he has in the last week?
Well, you put some stress on me. I'm almost as if I shouldn't speak, so we want to keep this thing quiet, okay? No. Here we are talking with the New York Giants fans, right? This might get out. Now, Ben Sinnott's a great story. First of all, you got to factor in where we are right here at K-State, just a couple hours down the road from where Travis Kelce plays football. And the Chiefs are the biggest deal right here. And so that tight end position is highly glorified around here. He's a kid who grew up in Iowa, Chiefs football country, and was a walk-on to K-State. Chris Kleiman is a guy who's from Iowa, the head coach at K-State right now, who had come from North Dakota State. He played for Northern Iowa. He loves Iowa kids. So Ben Sinnott walks on to the Wildcats program, and he just starts working and working up the ladder without a lot of fanfare. Not someone you would have talked about 3 years ago at all. Here's a guy now who's played 4 years at K-State, and he really just came onto the scene right at the end of 21 a little bit, and pretty much near the end of the 22 season, he showed this ability to play at a very high level. And then last year, he was targeted. He was a star player. Everybody knew about it. But he's been able to have that humble attitude of a walk-on and just working along with the flair and skill level that he's been able to show. And then when he went to the combine, he scored unbelievably on the athletic side.
I know.
He exploded.
Yeah.
You know, he wears a big elbow brace and, you know, looks like a tight end. You know he's really good, but when he exploded there, that was just confirmation that this kid isn't a guy who's a walk-on. He's a superstar athlete for a tight end who has so much room to grow because he's gotten better. Guys, he is a guy who deserves any accolades you want to give him, say, hey, he's first-team All-Big 12 or whatever. He deserves that. But I'm telling you, he's kind of a little baby when you talk about the development. This is not a four-star he should have been a four-star recruit, but he wasn't. And so his freshman and sophomore years, his first 2 years there, he's just quietly working. And so he has a lot to learn to continue to improve his craft. And I just think he is a great prospect if you're able to take a guy who knows how to play at a high level. He's got very good hands. But what did we talk about with Cooper Beebe? Okay, he was lined up on that offensive line as well. So he's one of the few tight ends in the country who can go catch, and that's really his better thing, receiving the football. But he was demanded to play fullback, H-back, and line up on the line and block. I mean, block at K-State. So his physicality is good because he's had to play with it and that walk-on mentality. But he's really kind of an NFL-type guy who's going to flourish when he gets chances to run pass patterns. So really an exciting prospect with a lot of growth, I think, still there.
Well, Stan, you mentioned his growth, and he's got plenty of room to still scratch the surface. I want to expand more on the blocking front because you said they utilized him as an H-back and a fullback. There's a distinct difference between a team asking a player to block versus a player having the desire to want to do that. So how would you assess where he walked that fine line? Even though they asked him to do that, his sense of energy and willingness to want to take part in that facet.
Well, that's where those interviews really are going to be helpful that the Giants had with him. Because, you know, if you watch a Rocky movie, Rocky's a little different in Rocky 3 and 4. He's a little fancier, you know, has a different mentality than he had in Rocky 1.
Sure.
So I'm going to say, let's go back. When he was asked to be a fullback first, no one knew he was going to be an NFL player. Never thought about it, okay? He's just a second-year guy at K-State, a walk-on, maybe someday going to earn a scholarship, and they have two backs in the backfield. And he needs to go in there and block. Let me tell you, he loved it. He loved blocking and being physical and making his way onto the field for the K-State Wildcats. So deep down, it's been no problem. He's definitely played and earned his way more as a fullback H-back. And then all of a sudden, Will Howard is the name that played at K-State and was a quarterback when K-State won a Big 12 championship 2 seasons ago. It might be the starting quarterback for Ohio State this year. That's the reason why I bring it up. Will Howard and he have a connection. They're great friends. And with Will Howard starting to get the quarterback opportunity for Adrian Martinez, who transferred from Nebraska and now plays for the Birmingham Stallions, it's a small world here. When Will Howard came in and started throwing the ball, he started throwing the ball to Ben Sennett. And that's when we got the opening up of, wait a second, this guy's a great receiver. He's working his way in the middle. He's catching the football, and he looks like an NFL receiver. So, to me, it's kind of, where is he in the Rocky stature? You know, I think of this guy, he's going to block and love it and want to be a part of it. Now, I don't know if he's gotten so used to catching the football from Will Howard and playing that way at K-State that he only wants to catch passes, but I don't think it's a problem. He's come from a hard-nosed attitude around K-State football. It's a given. You don't block, you don't play.
So, Stan, what you're saying is he's still rolling the tires down the alley then. He's still in that phase of Rocky is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't want to see him in too fancy a house. If you guys draft him, don't give him too much money up front, okay?
Yeah, there's definitely...
I loved Rocky. I loved Rocky 3. I'm just talking, you know, he's a little bit softer.
Sure.
Then and may not want to block as much.
I know. I like the film analogy. It's great.
He's got a lot of upside. You got another offensive lineman over there, too, who is extremely versatile. KT Leviston, who I'm guessing his best fit is guard in the NFL. But you tell me based on what you've seen.
Well, he's played tackle a lot. And so he can definitely give you a shot. And KT Leviston was not as renowned a couple years ago as Cooper Beebe was. You know, K-State was very fortunate to have him come back one more year. They thought he might go pro last year, and all he did is step it up and become first-team All-American. Well, he lined up right next to KT Leviston. And I think KT Leviston really grew a lot. He's a smart kid, but he probably wasn't as willing early in his career to punch you in the mouth. You know, he was having a good time being a college student. I'm not talking about partying. I'm just saying he didn't think about, hey, I'm going to be an NFL player. He was just working his way up the ladder. But when he was around Cooper Beebe this last year, guys, he stepped it up to another level. He's a prospect now that has a lot of growth. I think he can really grow a ton because he's got great athleticism. Mm-hmm. So he just needs to continue to get reps. He needs more reps. You know, just even though he started a season and a half, I know that's good, but there's so much more growth, and now he is so mature. He's just like you would expect a graduate to be. When a guy comes in, and we had a big senior get-together for these guys just a couple weeks ago, and all the old K-State players introduced them and said, welcome to our world. You're walking across the line. You're alumni now. And to see the talk about him that the coach has had and how much he's grown up and how he's taken care of his studies and everything in his life, he is a grown up and ready to roll. And so I think he's an interesting prospect. You know, it won't be easy for him to stick in the NFL. It's not easy to be an NFL player, but he has a chance to pop and really do some good work.
Stan, last player that I want to bring up is their edge rusher, Khalid Duke. It's interesting to me, his sack numbers dipped from, well, I should say they increased from 2022 to 2023, but his tackles dipped. I'm just wondering what that may be a product of and where you see perhaps his upside on the next level.
He's definitely a player that you need to look at and look at the highlight tape and also look at his measurables, because he looks like the NFL player who should be able to play at a high level, okay? And that's the thing you got to focus in on, because some of his production may not match up with that, and then you go, uh-oh, question marks, is there a problem? Let me explain one thing quickly to the fans there. K-State has adapted to a new defense in his last couple of years that Khalid Duke had to play in, and that defense was a 3-3-5. It works well in college. It really puts these passing games into a bind. And there's all kinds of leverage points when you get into the details of, you know, you're going to have seven guys up at the line of scrimmage or eight if it's a running play. But when you start with six, where's the next two guys come from? They come from all over. But if you're on the defensive end position in the 3-3-5, guess what? When you look before the ball snapped, you're short on defensive players. So it's very likely you're going to get hit by two guys immediately. And they're going to double team you, and it's going to be the safeties and the linebackers who run through and get to make the tackle.
Sure.
So that's one of the things for Felix Anudike. Uzomah was a first-round pick for the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's one of the things they had to look at because the numbers weren't exciting for him rushing the passer and sacking the quarterback a ton because he constantly had to fight through double teams to get there. And he made a lot of plays and showed his ability, and that's what you got to see with Khalid Duke as well, is a project. You know, he didn't have tons of sacks throughout his career, but, man, when you look at his body type and what he can do, potential sure there. I'm optimistic that he's going to be a really good NFL player, but playing a defensive end in that 3-3-5 just covers you up a little bit more. You know, they got two guys on you all the time, so you don't get free runs around the end very often.
No, I think that's a very valid point. That's why we appreciate the context, because as I mentioned, you see the stats on paper and there's always some rationale behind it. He is Stan Weber, former Kansas State quarterback, color analyst on the Kansas State Radio Network, breaking down what to expect from this group of Wildcats. Stan, greatly appreciate the time and the insight, and very much look forward to talking to you down the road and hearing more Rocky analogies.
Stay well.
Thank you guys very much. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you got it, Stan. Our pleasure. Some great insight on Cooper Beebe and some of the other players that you certainly should keep tabs on. And Beebe is going to be, to me, a guy that's going to fit in very nicely on the NFL level, just because when you have that toughness factor.
He's a horse.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a problem for him to adapt to the physicality of the NFL.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. And again, another player who he also used that magical word with the C, center.
Yeah.
Possibility of maybe even working out at center. You can never, ever underestimate the value of that.
Well, that's why when I had Stan first on, I was asking him about, I mean, look at this. He had seven starts at right tackle, one at left guard in 2020. Then he's the full-time starter at left tackle in 2021, the last two seasons at left guard. So he even mentioned during a game, if they would lose an offensive lineman and Beebe was more comfortable kicking out or moving around, they'd move Beebe. Now, I'm not saying, Paul, we know this from watching the Giants. It's not necessarily what you want to throw a young guy into, but in the blink of an eye, if you do come across injuries and you know all of the positions that he was thrown in at college, that to me makes him even more appealing to draft him.
I don't think there's any doubt that he will be one of that next cluster. You know, we're going to see a bunch of tackles go early in the first round, and then there's going to be that second cluster. He's going to be right in the middle of that.
Well, that's why starting in the second round, third round, I'm sure BB is going to be on the radar of a number of teams.
But this is why people have been saying, and we've told you since the combine, that there are plenty of legitimate make-it offensive linemen in this draft. It's kind of ironic. You know, the Giants needed offensive linemen after last year, and they went out and they wound up buying a whole bunch of veteran guys who I think they believe are going to be immediate plug-and-play guys. See, that's the one thing. These are still college players. They have to project. They have to grow and mature and be groomed. You would have to be more patient. I still think it would actually be advantageous for the Giants perhaps to potentially at some point in the draft to address the offensive line and to take another prospect. I don't think it necessarily has to be first or second round or even third round, but it's so deep at the offensive line in this draft, you can get a guy in the fourth round who's a legitimate piece of clay that, you know, you'll redshirt him for a year. You don't need him to play this year with all the veterans you signed.
Well, but remember, you don't know who's going to stay healthy. Well, no, I'm not trying to jinx anything, Paul, but I mean, let's face it.
Mr. Jinx, right here.
No, it's not. It's the reality. No, I mean, you have to listen. Any GM that feels optimistic about their offensive line still has to go into the year saying, we're going to lose somebody.
No doubt.
We're going to lose somebody for a section of games. That's why. And also, when you look at the backups, I would say there may be even more urgency, Paul, I would argue, to draft an interior offensive lineman. Because here's the thing. Azudu and McKeithen, how many more seasons do you want to go in saying there's going to be the year they're going to stay healthy? Okay, there's going to be year
just
three
don't know.
For the both
you
of them.
You just don't know.
So
I know.
That
I get
right
it.
There, okay.
I get it.
Austin Schlotman, okay, he's a veteran, but he's not necessarily a long-term guy that's going to be on the roster guaranteed. So, I mean, those are your three secondary interior offensive
linemen.
Well,
Stinney is interior also.
But that's correct. Aaron Stinney.
He's in. He ran
from Tampa Bay. No, he has a lot of starting
experience
too.
A lot of games.
Whether it be with Tennessee or
Tampa
Bay.
So, I mean, you know, they've got numbers. They've got numbers. Now, how good are any of these guys going to wind up being as they start playing together? None of us know the answer to that, but they certainly have numbers.
They do. But also, we're looking at numbers now, and then what happens is you get through training camp, you lose a guy.
Matt Nelson, too, on the outside.
Matt Nelson, correct.
Is part of that third tackle mix, if necessary, that they decide he's going to be out there.
I guess I was focusing more on the interior.
And he started
guys.
Some games, too.
He did. But I'm looking more at the interior, center/guard. And that's why, you know, when we're having the conversation about Cooper Beebe. Now, to your point, do you necessarily have to take somebody in the second round? Maybe not. But hey, if you really like the prospect, there's room for somebody to come in and be a security blanket insurance policy on this team, because as good as these guys are in terms of the experience factor that you mentioned, there's no guarantee they're going to play all 17 games. And you can't operate
and
like that.
And we've seen guys drop like flies in this training camp at many a times at different positions, including the offensive line.
Well, we've seen, whether it be with the Giants or other NFL teams, Paul, where you go in, and right now it's easy to have this conversation. There's no contact, right? In April, you can have as much wishful thinking as you want. You look top to bottom, offensive line. You say, oh, they're in good shape. They've got one or two backups. Then you get to August, and then I'm taking two guys out of the equation. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you've got to operate where if you lose one or two, now all of a sudden the group is not as promising as it was on paper back in April. That's why the draft is not all about 2024. The draft is about what can you do with these guys in the years following. All right, let's open up the phone lines as we move forward here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bash is in Ohio, and he joins us here. What's happening, Bash? What do you got for us?
How are we doing, Lance? How are you doing, Paul?
Hi.
Doing all right. What's on your mind?
I had a question for y'all. As far as I listened to this podcast, long listener, as far as I haven't got in with y'all, listen to the mock that y'all had last Friday, and both of y'all, it's good to see that Paulie and Lance, y'all are both former Joe, was the second round with the 47th pick, and John was talking to y'all about Michael Penix, and I know you both said y'all wasn't touching him with a long stick, as far as, especially you, Paulie, you have no interest in Michael Penix at the 247 in his second round pick, so I was asking, if everybody felt the same way you felt, Paulie, as far as that, and he lasts all the way to the third round with the 306 pick, would you consider him at the third round, knowing you don't want him in the second round? And I had a follow-up question as far as a draft scenario. as far as for the first round pick, and see what y'all thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I won't speak for the Giants because that's not my place. But if it's me, I'm going to tell you, I'm really kind of scared that Audric Estime, the running back from Notre Dame, who back at the combine I had said, boy, I would seriously consider him in the third round because I'm not sure he's going to get to the fourth. Well, as you know, once again, reports came out this week that Estime supposedly had a visit with the Giants, and now his name has been all over the papers the last few days. you know, I hate when that happens, but yeah, I've had Estime pegged for months as a guy who I would strongly consider in the third. So there's your answer. No, I would not draft Michael Penix in the third round.
I would. I'd consider him in the third round. I have no problem with that. I mean, my concern about Penix is just the durability, the injury history. I think he's got a really good skill set, and he's got a strong arm. So, I mean, third round and later, I think that that's solid value where I would absolutely entertain him.
Okay. And my draft scenario, as far as I listen to y'all, Mark, as far as the sixth round pick, now, if it goes this route, as far as we know, the first pick is Caleb Bowen to the Bears. And Washington is going quarterback as far as that. And Patriots stay fit and take quarterback. And now you have the Cardinals and Chargers sitting there 4-5. And we just heard reports that the Cardinals is looking for 3 first-round picks for their third pick for someone to move up for a quarterback. So say they stay fit and the Vikings don't trade with the Cardinals and they take Marvin Harrison Jr. And then Chargers sitting there and nobody trades with them and they take Napier. And we're sitting there at 6, where we have J.J. on the board, Rome Odunze on the board. What are we looking at as far as that possibility? Are we considering trading down with the Vikings still trying to move up as far as the 6th spot? What would y'all think in that scenario with the 3 quarterbacks and then Napier and Harrison both off the board at 6, and we're sitting there at 6 with J.J. and Rome sitting on the board?
Well, I mean, you threw us in 75.
There's a lot there, but you
don't, trying to digest.
You don't need to prod me twice to take Rome Odunze, okay? I don't need any time to waste by getting that card up to the podium. I'm taking Odunze. Now, I will say this. You have to do your due diligence, and the general manager, Joe Shane, has already said he's gotten a ton of calls from people behind him interested in that 6th pick. So, yes, you'd have to field those phone calls and see if somebody makes you a godfather offer that you can't refuse to move down. My inclination would be to run the card up for Odunze, but I would certainly listen to the phone calls and probably take the duration of my time just to make sure that somebody did not give me the keys for Fort Knox because they wanted to go up and get a quarterback.
Well, it actually relates to what Joe Shane was talking about earlier, which you're hitting a little bit on, because he had mentioned there's two sides of the equation. You have to listen to what other teams are willing to offer, and then you also have to ask yourself, how far down are you willing to go, in which you would then perhaps miss out on other guys that are relatively high on your board?
We know who those teams are, though. I mean, we could tell you with 11, 12, and 13, those are the 3 teams that are probably the most hungry to move up to go grab whatever quarterback is left on the board.
Well, but that also, from Joe Shane's perspective, he may say,
that's too
I
low.
Move 6 spots.
Yeah, he
I
may
lose
say,
out on
yeah.
6 potential
He
players.
Might just say, you know what, forget this.
It's not worth
that's
it.
That's too far down. Yeah. I'm not going.
And
he could do that too.
And you know, Paul, you and I have had conversations. My feeling is, unless they're giving you unreal assets that are going to blow you away.
Right.
If there's conviction in the room and you
a
love
godfather
a player,
offer.
You take the player.
We're on the same page here. We are totally on the same page here.
I don't think it's worth, for one additional pick that you may get a year or two down the road, I don't see why that's worth passing up on a player you really like.
Yeah. Now, Minnesota's the interesting one because I think they have 11 and 23 in this year's draft. And, you know, look, I'm not telling you anything you haven't already heard. But, yes, I believe very strongly they are going to do everything humanly possible to move up. And they'll use those 2 picks, plus whatever else they have to do, to go up and get the quarterback that they want. I think that's very, very, very likely. Now, if Minnesota were to call me and I'm the Giants at 6, am I willing to listen? I'll listen and just see how desperate they are. But chances are, I'm probably just going up with the card of Odunze.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, to me, if you love a player and you feel that that player has separated himself from the rest of the pack at a given position, I just, once again, being enamored with grabbing an additional pick here or there, I don't see why that should now get in the way of you taking a player that could come in and help you immediately. Now, with that being said, and we appreciate the phone call, Bash. Thanks for giving us a ring. Joe Shane was also asked about how he would assess the roster, and he did say he doesn't think going into this draft, Paul, that they're one or two players away from being a finished product, meaning they need to address
on
various
both
areas.
Offense and
correct,
defense.
Correct, because he was asked about, with Shane Bowen coming in as a new coordinator, is there more thinking about, okay, you got to help the newer coordinator because he hasn't been here and you want to get him the resources and the assets? And he goes, well, when I look at the roster, given we're not one or two players away, I can argue we could help the defense as much as the offense, vice versa. Now, does that then change Joe Shane's thinking in saying, well, I'm more willing to move down because I don't think, as good as the player may be that we take at six, he alone is not going to come in? I don't know, but my response to that would be, I would still lean towards the player because, once again, if you're not one or two players away, what could the guy do for you in 2025? What could the guy do for you in 2026? You still got to think that way, Paul. Okay, so maybe he doesn't put on the cape and save the day now, but what could he do to help your team in the next 2 to 3 years down the road? You can't dismiss that when evaluating a player.
Like I said, it would take an absolutely Herculean offer to make me move at that spot. If I truly believed that the player on my board and the guy who I've got penciled in on the card is the real thing. And I don't know anybody who has said that Harrison, Odunze, and Neighbors are not the real thing. I've yet to run into one person who has said to me they will not be a big-time star, impact player, difference maker in this league. I haven't come into play with one doubter, not one. Well, that to me, I can have, you know, that's the kind of confidence you have to have. You know, I've said this for years. Pound your fist on the table kind of guy? Is Odunze a pound your fist on the table kind of guy? From everything that I've heard and that I've seen and that I've studied, yeah, he is one of those guys.
Well, and that's why, especially when you combine that with playmaker and the need for the Giants, it's hard to give that up.
It happens to fit their need.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Joe Shane also repeated what we've said on this show again, where he said, we need to score more points. That was an exact quote.
Absolutely.
From Joe Shane.
Yes, he
the
did.
Press conference.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He said, and he also, by the way, he did say that Slayton was not here, but that he's had conversations with the agent. They get along very well. He likes him, and that this is a voluntary spring session and that it has no impact on his draft at all. He also went on to say, with the wide receivers in the room, we do need to score more points, and an additional player that could help us do that would be welcome.
There's room to add another
player.
That was essentially because he sort of said, you got Jalin Hyatt taking the top off the offense and the defense, excuse me. You got Wandell Robinson in the slot. He was going piece by piece, but it didn't spell out to say, oh, no, we have no room for anybody else. Also, I'm glad you went with personnel, because the one thing that we didn't talk about off the top that I want to get to here before we try to squeeze in maybe another caller or two is Darren Waller was addressed by Joe Shane,
yes,
too. Okay, we didn't get to that item off the top because we had so much to squeeze in. So he said that they have no definitive decision as of yet from Darren Waller. They've been in communication with Waller and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and they are being respectful and giving him the time to still think things
through. There's no deadline.
They didn't give him a deadline saying they need to know by the draft because they, once again, respect who Waller is. And they also said that there's been no conversations about extending Waller's contract in terms of financial flexibility or whatever it may be within the cap because they recently worked out a new deal. So those were the items that at least he addressed with respect to Darren Waller. No closure on that front. And in all likelihood, there probably won't be any closure until after the draft, at least based on what Joe Shane was throwing out there
right
to the media.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, with that being said, it doesn't look like we're going to squeeze in anybody else unless you have anything else.
Time has run out.
Okay, time has run out. See, the clock was expiring. There may not be a deadline for Darren Waller, but there's a deadline on this show.
Well, my stomach says there is because I'm hungry.
Oh, so that's the rationale why we're wrapping up shop. Okay. Well, I looked at the clock. Well, Pearson then seconds you from that front. Well, listen, we managed to get in everything we wanted, though.
Yes, we did.
Joe Shane recap, two teams worth of prospects, and we'll be back as our normal business hour calls for at 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday to continue Giants talk here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. A few reminders, though, that I will definitely squeeze in before we wrap up the program in terms of our program. The Giants Huddle Podcast, you can check that out on your favorite podcast platform. You can also go to giants.com/podcast. As we look ahead to the 2024 season, you can take your fandom to the next level. Season ticket memberships, stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2024 season. To learn more about all the exclusive member benefits, you can visit giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. And the Giants official connected TV streaming app, Giants TV. It brings you original video content, endgame highlights on demand and direct to Big Blue fans. Giants TV, it's free. It's on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and the Giants mobile app. And today's episode is part of the Giants platforms everywhere and giants.com/podcast. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Beddoe. Stay locked to giants.com for all the latest, and we'll speak to you on Friday right here on BBKL. Have a good one.